this is wild. The fact that she like takes her clothes off and starts undressing and you're like, in my Godzilla movie? No.
Anime troll, she's going wild, man.
It's like, yeah, for sure an anime right here.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to Podzilla. I am Jaysha, and I'm here with my brother, Micah.
Hey, this episode is a singularity. It's existing in two simultaneous universes at the same time. You're listening to it, and at the same time, other people aren't listening to it.
Oh my goodness. I can see here on our monitor that we aren't even recording the episode right now. Do you believe that?
Says that I'm still asleep napping. And Jaysha's editing an episode? What is this?
What?
Quantum Podzilla.
Time and space unraveling around us. But yeah, welcome back to the show, guys. This is the show where we watch through every single Godzilla movie in order of release date, and we are getting ever closer to Godzilla X Kong coming out in about a month now, I think. A month and a half.
That's the end goal.
Yeah.
That's the finish line. We're so close.
It's a sprint to get there at the moment and finish up all these movies and shows in time. So yeah, this is the third movie in the Godzilla anime trilogy we're talking about today. We've done all three of these in like a week and a half.
It's been great.
It's been good,
loving
eh?
It.
So I'm excited to get into the Planet Eater, but first, Micah, maybe more important and more beloved than the Planet Eater is, Minecraft.
Absolutely more beloved. Yeah.
We've been talking about it on the show for the last couple of weeks, I think, that there's been a official Minecraft DLC which adds Godzilla and Godzilla game modes and Godzilla maps. And we actually both downloaded it with friend of the show, Big O, who was guested on our Godzilla vs. King Ghidorah Heisei episode a while back. But the three of us downloaded it, jumped in together. We clocked the game.
It's mind-blowing just how much content was in this little, like, $12 DLC.
Mm.
But essentially, four game modes. We talked about it last episode completely wrong. There is not a PvP mode. One of the modes is you're each controlling a Godzilla and fighting against different hordes of kaiju.
Yeah.
Wave survival. Cool. There is Shin Godzilla, where you're trying to put up walls and repel it from the city. There is one where it's almost like parkour, running away from Godzilla and his beams, saving civilians at the same time, and what was it, grabbing some hard tech?
It's a lot of hard tech, which is an item you need to pick up in all these Godzilla maps, and I cannot remember hard tech in any Godzilla movie.
I don't know what hard tech is. I think it's like army rations that don't
expire. Yeah, it's just
expire.
Like tasteless
garbage.
Yeah. That sustains you.
Sustaining heart attack. And then there was the final one, Godzilla versus Kong, where you're in these little like hovercraft taking mm-hmm. photos of the big battle. And I've got to say, guys, I haven't seen Godzilla versus Kong yet. I don't need to anymore. I've seen every single battle in that movie.
I've taken photos of the big Mechagodzilla fight. You know exactly how it's going to go down.
Yep. I've seen it from multiple angles, which you out there listening cannot say. Maybe I've seen more of Godzilla versus Kong than you have.
Frankly, I was scared of that Godzilla versus Kong mode just because Kong's model, man, his butt. Did you see this? They've like made his butt pronounced. His cheeks.
Cheeked up.
Yeah. I felt uncomfortable.
And you have to take photos of it.
You need to take photos of Kong's butt and they get plastered on a big wall after you finish the mode.
No, it's good stuff. What was your favorite game mode?
My favorite game mode was probably like the wave survival mode because we each got to play as different Godzillas and you just get different waves of enemies specifically from older Godzilla movies, which was really, really cool. There was one wave of enemies that were all insects or bugs. So we're going up against Mothra, Megaguirus, Kumanga, Kamacurus, a few others all at once, which was really, really fun. But my favorite thing about the whole DLC is probably the little museum. Mm. You unlock collectibles as you complete the missions, and you either unlock statues for your museum or photos, and they're all of monsters from throughout all the different eras of Godzilla. I think every single monster in any Godzilla movie is represented in this museum by the end of collecting them all up, except for King Caesar. For some reason, they completely forgot about King Caesar. I mean, Giant Condor has a big photo in this kaiju museum. Mm. Where's King Caesar at?
Did Giant Octopus?
No. Yeah.
A few of those fringe ones, but yeah, King Caesar is like a glaring omission.
Yeah. But it was cool. It was really cool to unlock them all, to see them all in the big museum. It was cool to see them all rendered and modeled in Minecraft fashion. What was your favorite game mode?
I felt like there wasn't enough of it, but the parkour one where you're running away from Godzilla and getting the hard tack, inject that into my veins, give me 20 levels, I will have an absolute blast doing it.
Well, you know, the thing is, Micah, it's not just like parkour running away from Godzilla. That's what you were doing. Would go into this match, Micah just boosts for the exit. And then me and Biggo are actually completing the missions you're supposed to complete around the map.
There weren't missions.
There was literal missions that you have to complete before you escape. You have to like blow up a train. And you
what
have
are you doing
to,
blowing up trains? You're supposed to be getting out of there.
You have to drill through some rock. And then Mike is just getting to the exit. And then me and Biggo see a big pop-up that says, you got 50 seconds to escape.
I saved a girl from a burning building. I also wanted to mention as well, there was that Shin Godzilla mode, repelling him from the city. That was very fun. You're let loose in this giant, destroyable city, trying to go through the buildings and finding chests with, what was in it, like air missiles and walls you can put up. Very fun.
Mm.
Biggo in the third mission when we're facing Shin Godzilla, fourth form, we were gearing up for this final battle, scouring the city for items. Biggo finds this like one little syringe of like anticoagulant or something.
It's how they kill Shin Godzilla in the Shin Godzilla movie. Yeah.
So me and Jayce are out here trading with the civilians, trying to up our materials.
Preparing for like 10 minutes to fight Godzilla.
I'd say even longer. We were jumping off buildings to try and respawn faster. We were getting into it. Biggo uses this one item and game immediately over.
Yeah. Yeah. It was a bit of an anticlimactic little last battle there. But I mean, it was fun. We played it for a couple hours. I think it is about $10. To buy and add to your Minecraft account. You get a whole lot of skins. I was playing as someone dressed as Manila. I unlocked a Manila skin. It's really cool. Again, I'm so surprised by how much love they're putting into all these little Godzilla games or Godzilla appearances around other games, because there are so many references, again, to every single monster from the Showa Heisei and Millennium eras. Yeah, just a lot of love. You can tell fans have spent a lot of time making this.
Yeah, and this wasn't made by Mojang or the people behind Minecraft. It was developed by Japanese creators, Team KYO and Impress.
Hmm.
Phenomenal job with it. It's absolutely awesome. I would recommend it, even if you're not a fan of Minecraft. It's another little piece of Godzilla video game history now. It's really fun, and you can play with up to 7 friends. It's 8 people all up.
Yeah, I can definitely, it didn't really feel like Minecraft. I mean, it's definitely got like the picking up items and the inventory management, but you're not breaking blocks, you're not crafting. It kind of feels like its own little Godzilla game within the Minecraft world.
Mm.
Which was cool to play something like that. Yeah, worth checking out. But I mean, should we just get into Godzilla the Planet Eater?
Yeah, there's no mega news long for me, Jasha, so feel free, go straight ahead.
We've already had our game segment. We just need a title for it.
Did you want me to do my Voxel Wars Hour?
No, let's put that next episode. Next episode, we can have Voxel Wars Hour. But yeah, let's cap off the anime trilogy, and I'll bring us in to Godzilla the Planet Eater. Are After destroying Mechagodzilla City, Godzilla appears dormant. That should give humanity a breather, right? Wrong. The remaining Bilucilato seize control of the Aerotrim's engine room. The Ixif radicalize everyone into joining their cult, and Haruo reels from the loss of Yuko to nanometal. Following Martin's advice, Haruo decides to lay low, hiding away with Maina, one of the Hotua, and even connecting life with her. Wild, wild stuff. And while they get it on, the Ixif summon King Ghidorah, the Golden Demise, an interdimensional being with the ability to bend time and space to its will. Ghidorah destroys the Aerotrim and descends from the heavens to the earth, where it starts to siphon life from Godzilla. However, Haruo regains his resolve and faces Metfis, eventually breaking his connection with Ghidorah and allowing Godzilla to send the being back to wherever it came from. Years later, the remaining humans find peace living with the Hotua. Haruo finally finds solace, as with Maina and his unborn child, he even finally experiences spring upon Earth. But a vision suggests King Ghidorah's eventual return. Martin starts building a new civilization from the nanometal remnants of the old, and Haruo sacrifices himself to stop history from repeating itself again, to stop humanity's hate from living on in this new world, to finally stop Godzilla and the Planet Eater. And the Planet Eater. But not Martin.
He's not stopping. He did stop Martin.
No.
He did literally put a stop to what Martin was trying to do.
Yeah, but Martin continues on anyway.
Yeah, I guess Martin's still alive. Who knows where he's going to go?
I just want to start off by saying there was a lot of character development happening while watching this movie. My character development specifically, because we watched this in the English dub.
We did.
I'd been watching the Japanese sub. I love Martin. I love the voice of Japanese Martin. What my first note here when going into this movie, English Martin sucks. Me and Martin have parted ways on good terms.
Really? You were just ready to drop Martin?
Yeah.
After hearing his English voice.
But I will say two notes later, wait, English Martin is actually so good. There's a few more Martin notes as the movie went on.
Let me see your notes right now. All I see is a Martin written here. Every single note is about Martin.
Martin is love, Martin is life. That's all I can say.
We did watch the English dub. I know I promised I was going to watch the Japanese version to fully experience Martin. We did, after watching it, we switched to the Japanese version, went to a Martin scene just so I could, you know, breathe him in all his glory.
Yeah.
He was all right.
No, yeah, it wasn't the best scene. He was going through some stuff.
He's all right in the English version. He's okay in the Japanese. I think you're just like, you're hearing something that's not there.
We needed to watch Godzilla the Planet Eater, the Martin cut. It's online somewhere. You missed out.
You're blinded. You just love this guy so much. His little hand on his chin, his hair flowing around, that you're hearing different things.
Can you blame me though?
Rose-colored hearing headphones, hearing aids.
Rose-tinted?
Rose-tinted.
Rose-colored hearing aids. Christmas is coming up soon, everyone.
Okay, we need to get into this movie because it really wasn't what I was expecting. From the very get-go, this is all about a cult. The whole like driving force of this movie is that Metfis, slowly in the background of the last two movies, has been converting heaps and heaps of people to join his the Ixif cult.
Yeah.
And
it gets to a point at this one that, like, Haruo comes back from the big Mechagodzilla battle in the last movie. Yuko is completely brain dead, and she actually stays that way, which was surprising. I thought they were just going to do a cop-out, find a way to reverse the nanometal, bring her back. Mm. So Haruo is not in a good place. He comes back to this Hotua tribe, and Metfi's just has all his other men, like, worshipping this god that is going to come and free them from Godzilla. Quite an interesting way for a Godzilla movie to go.
Yeah, especially, like, the last of a trilogy where the first two movies haven't gone too close to that idea of religion, apart from, like, a few sentences that have they're thrown to the side in the middle of completely different movies. What I did like is that the first movie, we had these three races, the humans, the Bilisaludo, and the Exifs.
Mm.
Second movie was almost all about the Bilisaludo, and you could say by the end of that movie, like, you're not worrying about them anymore.
The arc they've been pushed to the side. Finished, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Apart from one rando one here, which gives, yeah, this movie a lot to focus on, just that relationship between the humans and the Exif. And I don't know about you, but I really liked how much it lent just into that idea of, now that all hope is lost, we haven't really got any plans or any ways to defeat this Godzilla. The only thing we can do left is turn to the divine protectors of these planets.
Yeah, it was literally their last resort, right? Because there were fewer numbers. Mechagodzilla City was a write-off. Like, they had nothing else, no other means to try and take Godzilla down. They just saw how much he destroyed the Vultures and the Bilisaludo's plan. So, yeah, I didn't expect them to, like, go full on cult, right? Like, they're praying, they're doing, like, rituals, they're trying to convert everyone. I was surprised with Adam. You know Adam, one of the blonde members of the United Earth. He's a guy I keep getting confused throughout the movies.
Yep, yep.
But he was genuinely, like, an awesome dude in the original one, tried to stop Godzilla. He's gone full on cultist, full on zealot in this one. And it was such an interesting way for them to go. I loved it. There's all the stuff about that Metfi's has, like, slowly replaced Haruo as the leader of them all. He's converted them all. He's the only one that everyone's listening to. And Haruo's now just his, like, altarpiece, his little pawn that he can just get to be a symbol and nothing more than that.
Yeah, it's good. And it's done in a way, like, where it actually makes a lot of sense. I think it is Metfi's who says, there's a conversation he has with Haruo, and he's saying that what Haruo did was that if he, in the last movie, ended up sacrificing himself and Yuko to defeat Godzilla, he would have essentially become a monster himself.
Yeah.
And in denying becoming a monster, he would have had to turn physically and mentally into one. And he would have had to throw away that humanity. But now that he's embraced that humanity, he's kind of, like, taking on the sins and the fear of everybody else in this movie.
It gets
to a really, really cool point where, like you said, Metfi's is, like, almost a bishop, or, like you said, the mouthpiece for this other religious icon, to the point where he's seen so much as this deity above them that nothing Haruo says has any weight anymore.
Yeah.
It's all about him eventually sacrificing himself to save them all.
Yeah, it's so interesting, right? And Metfi's has this whole speech midway through the movie when he's like, the Exif have just waited specifically for this day on Earth where they can harvest. He says that the Exif go around waiting for planets to, like, have their seeds become fruit, and then their god, King Ghidorah, just comes to eat that fruit. Every single planet is just meant to be an offering to God. Like, again, it just leans into this real crazy mythos and lore that I love about these movies. But they're praying to King Ghidorah at points throughout this movie. They're saying things like, feast upon us, bring us divine victory, deliver your golden demise.
Yeah, I really like that they have a few cool nicknames for him there.
Yeah, I love the golden demise.
There's the golden demise, the golden wings of demise, the king of the void. Yeah, just some, I've got to say, some awesome names for a deity right here.
Yeah.
In that same speech about the Ghidorah coming for the fruit as well, it's revealed that the whole reason they're doing this is that the Ixif race has progressed so far technologically that they've actually used some instruments, and this is where that Garbetrium comes in. Mm. They've scientifically found a way to prove the existence of a god, which is Ghidorah there, but it goes in a wild direction. It says that they looked into the future to see what life was like in millions of years' time, but they found that time was linear and actually did have an end. And the whole reason for doing this, for calling upon Ghidorah to consume and eat these planets as the Planet Eater, there's no such thing as eternity. We knew we had to find peace and comfort in the destruction of the universe.
To just come to terms with it all happening.
Yeah. And I know that we both really liked the rationalization that the Bilisaluda had for their ideals and how they turned out in that movie. And I really liked that as well. The idea that when all hope is lost, when you know for a fact that things are going to end, this is just a race that has come to peace with that. Mm-hmm. And on one hand, you're like, can you really blame them for that? If they have scientifically proven without a fact that things are going to end, there's nothing they can do, why not come to peace with that?
Yeah.
On the other hand, yeah, they do shut down and consume other races and other planets for that as well, which is the negative side of that coin. So this movie falls in a really nice place where they've come to terms with it, but humanity is still holding on.
Yeah, because it's also revealed, like, I think we already knew it, but King Ghidorah destroyed their planet. It was like their monster, right?
Yeah, the big conversation last movie about how each planet eventually creates this monster who becomes top of the food chain.
Yeah, but they willingly, it's revealed that the Ixif willingly were destroyed by King Ghidorah. They sacrificed themselves because that very reason you were saying, like, they've seen the future, they are okay with how it's meant to play out.
And they've almost had to glorify being sacrificed to it and succumbing themselves to it.
Yeah, it's just, it's crazy. And there is an awesome scene in this movie where the whole cult's like praying for Ghidorah. They're drinking a whole lot of like holy soup that was brewed up for them, and they're praying, they're wailing, they're asking the golden demise to fall upon them. And it's a scene straight out of like Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Oh, you're right. Yeah.
Where you hear the King Ghidorah.
Bitty, 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 bitty.
Yeah. You hear it coming in. You see the heads kind of in silhouetted in the shadows coming out of the bowl, and you just see people getting dismembered as King Ghidorah comes to them, as the golden demise falls upon them. People's arms are coming off, legs are coming off, they're falling to the ground. And you see the shock in Adam's face when he realizes actually like what this thing is and what they've been worshipping and what they've allowed to happen just before he gets taken by Ghidorah.
I love that scene. It's so great.
It's awesome.
Yeah, I love the introduction to that, how it's not Ghidorah or like yellow spectral forms that end up eating these people. It's the shadows that get them. Like, they grow out from the ground and they eat their shadows. It's so good. But from that point on, you're kind of brought through this like scene after scene, play by play, of just all these different factions or groups of people just being decimated by Ghidorah in one way or another. We have that group of cults on Earth. We go back to the Aratrim. The Aratrim?
I have no clue.
Aratrim?
Aratrim?
Where they are literally calling Ghidorah into their plane of existence. And
oh my gosh.
I love that scene as well, where you see this like singularity, this black hole open up in the sky. And I love just how distressed all of the people on the ship are. And it's done in a way where each section of the ship, because of the like void and quantum nature of King Ghidorah in this movie, they all are like experiencing different parts of the attack at different times.
Yeah.
It's like the engine room with the remaining Bilisaluda is overheating and exploding. But the bridge crew is seeing like 40 seconds after that, and just then the engine's blowing up. And for the people back in the like crew departments, bridge has been lifeless for minutes.
Yeah, everything's distorting so much that all their monitor readings are wrong, or they're seeing things from the future. There's that exact scene where they're just seeing no signs of life on their monitor of where they actually were. Like on the bridge where we are now, there's no signs of life, but they're seeing the future when they've already died.
Yeah.
So creative.
And that's where we see our first like proper visual of Ghidorah in this movie, is this one huge long snake head, very serpentine and very almost thorny.
Yeah.
And this ship, the Aratrim, just gets decimated by this one singular head. What did you think of this iteration of Ghidorah? We've seen him with three heads, obviously, in almost every iteration so far. But this time, it's almost like each head is treated as its own thing.
Yeah, well, that's what I was wondering initially, because it only seems like it's one head, right, when it attacks the ship. And then the other heads later on in the movie come out of different wormholes. I was wondering if like he is only one head and it's just different instances of himself through time and space.
That would have been cool.
But we also do see like silhouetted visuals of the classic King Ghidorah design with the three-headed dragon at times throughout the movie, right?
Yeah. And that is confirmed. There was like a Bandai figure that came out before this movie released. And there is a proper version of this Ghidorah with the full-on body, three heads, two tails.
Yeah.
But yeah, we only see it in like, I think it's only a dream sequence in this one, actually.
Yeah, yeah. But man, I gotta say, like, is this the coolest take on King Ghidorah ever? I love how this guy looks, how he's just this endless neck, like little noodle thing coming out from the skies. It's creepy. He's like a snake, and he's got so many eyes upon his head, like some sort of insectoid thing going on. The mouth is real crooked and gnarly and elongated. And you add all that just to this lore around him. I don't feel like we've had this strong of a story behind King Ghidorah throughout the other movies. I mean, there's offhanded comments throughout the Showa era that like he was from Venus and he destroyed the Venusians, and then the Exilians got to him and they're using him to destroy other planets, things like that. But we don't really get a whole movie dedicated to specifically like the people who worship Ghidorah and how they do it and the history of him.
No, usually what we see is there's very little time building up the idea of King Ghidorah. Most of the movie is dedicated to his fights.
Yeah.
And I gotta say, for a movie that, or for a series of movies that focuses less on the kaiju fights, what this movie does so, so well is, yeah, build up that mythos, make us really fear King Ghidorah. And it's not just in the literal sense in this movie, because we have each of the snake heads, but we also see like the power of when he's actually fighting Godzilla as well.
Yeah.
I love what they've done with him. The fact that it seems like Ghidorah here is coming from a different universe.
Yeah.
He's being controlled by Metfi's as almost like a funnel to channel his power, but nothing can hurt Ghidorah.
No, because he's technically not here. He's technically like in another dimension, but yet he can be physical in his attacks because he's got like a priest here or someone who he can see through.
That shows itself in real cool ways as well. When Godzilla tries to fight him, he tries to let his, like, I can't remember, it's not called the atomic breath in this movie, but he sets it off, and Martin, bless his soul, he's like, the readings are showing that his blast just went straight through and nothing stopped it.
Yeah.
But you're clearly seeing that the Ghidorah head is like reflecting all these attacks and actually like bending his beam as well. The contrast between what you're seeing and what all the readings are showing in this movie, I think it makes you fear this Ghidorah more than any other iteration we've seen so far.
What an awesome idea for the character, right? Make him this interdimensional time and space, like controlling being. It's almost like an eldritch horror of sorts.
Yeah, for sure.
Especially with those visions and the rituals.
By far the most Lovecraftian monster we've seen so far on this podcast.
Yeah, because a lot of what he does is connected to the visions. I mean, we see later on Mitfies takes Haruo through this whole like vision quest of his past and his future, and we see King Ghidorah throughout that. Should we talk about Haruo? Should we talk about our man Haruo?
Nah.
You don't want to talk about Haruo?
I want to talk about Godzilla, but you can talk about Haruo first.
I think we owe it to him. I know that a lot of people's issues with the anime trilogy are Haruo. And I feel like we've really actually liked his journey in the last two episodes. But a lot of stuff happens in this movie with Haruo. I mean, first off, Yuko is gone, who we just kindled a little romance with in the last movie.
Not gone, per se.
Well,
consumed by the nanomaterial, brain is not functioning, but it's keeping her alive. She'll never come alive again, but she's like in a permanent coma.
Her body's just laying there. And he's definitely having some character development. He's lost almost all the resolve that he had in the first movie. He was so driven in that. He was so angry. Second movie, he's so depressed. Third movie, he's like even in a worse space. He's just lost the person he cared most about. It's like genuinely 100% hopeless right now because they have no other means to try to feed Godzilla. And yeah, I loved that we started with him in that place. And it's kind of just Mitfies trying to win him over.
Yeah, that's like the last line of defense. It's Haruo holding out against Mitfies telling him to just succumb to King Ghidorah.
And then you've got good old Martin being like, no, don't fall for that stuff.
Yeah. My main man, Martin.
That's one of the things I didn't love, like the start of this movie. I loved all the lore and all the cool world building again that we got throughout. But there's a couple times that like he'll go and have a talk to Martin and Martin will rock up and be like, hey, Haruo, just wanted to talk about this dude. And they have a conversation and then Mitfies rocks up and whispers in Haruo's ear. And then Martin rocks up a little later and he's like, hey again, Haruo, here's what I'm thinking with this stuff.
You don't like Martin being a good friend?
Martin being used solely for exposition to try and like put it together.
He's weatherman extraordinaire in this one. He's wearing so many hats, Josh. You wouldn't understand.
Can we talk about the Hotua? The Shobujin?
Yeah. Yeah.
Poor dude Haruo loses Yuko. Mere days later, it seems like. The Shobujin are trying to get with him. They're trying to...
Jason, they're not trying.
They're connecting life with Haruo. He's just wanting... All this dude's wanting to do is take a rest. And the Hotua are just throwing their clothes on the ground. And I was confused because it's Maina that he has the relationship with from the last one. She was the one who kind of healed him up, first met him. Who in the world does he sleep with in this movie, Micah?
I don't know, Jaisha.
Do both of them try to get with
what,
him?
Here's what I'll say. And I want to work through this with you because I do not know. Miana is the innocent one from the first one.
Yes.
I've got my board with my red string here because you're going to help me out here. Miana is the good one.
M-I-A?
Yeah, M-I. Miana is the good one.
Okay.
She's the one who originally in the second movie took his armor off, gave him her yellow powder that saved him from the nanomaterial.
Okay.
Yep.
Yeah, yeah.
In this one, he believes it's Miana coming to help him.
Yes.
And talk to him.
And then he denies her. He's like, no, put your clothes back on. I want to go to bed.
Let me sleep. I'm happy sleeping here for the night. They wake up and she's trying to get his armor off. And then he realizes this can't be Miana. This has to be Maina, the frowny one, because she doesn't know how to get my armor off.
And then he chooses to connect life with her.
To connect life with this one, the one who he hasn't had dealings with before and not the one he originally was with in the whole second movie.
So the one that he's already like built this relationship with, he's like, no, 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 let me sleep. And then the other one comes and he's like, wait a second, maybe.
I don't know. It doesn't make sense for him to connect life with the one who he... I don't know, dude.
I'm confused. How about people in the first place connecting life in a Godzilla movie? Did you think you'd see the day?
This is wild. The fact that she like takes her clothes off and starts undressing and you're like, in my Godzilla movie? No.
Anime troll, she's going wild, man.
It's like, yeah, for sure an anime right here.
But like,
why are they connecting life? Can you explain to me?
It's because for them, like, I don't know. They saw Haruo was down and sad and they really look up to Haruo and they need to make life out of this hopeless situation. So the Hotu away, you know? And then we get this whole bit about how Haruo's, we get like flashbacks that his name means hope.
Yeah. He can, when everything's going down. Actually, let's go to Godzilla for a second here.
Okay, we're gonna switch from Haruo. We can go back to your Godzilla.
Godzilla doing nothing. He is in hibernation from the last movie. But when Ghidorah comes, his eye opens and he rocks up and he gets bit in the shoulder, bit in the stomach, bit in the arm.
Pulled up into the air.
Trying to use his attacks and trying to grab this thing. Doesn't work. Ends up floating away like King Kong in these movies.
Like Showa King Kong.
Like Showa King Kong.
Pulled away, not on balloons, but on Ghidorah.
On Ghidorah heads. And really, that's all he does in this movie. He tries to go burning mode, but his something about his shields working but not working at the same time. And when everything's going down, when Godzilla's getting lifted off into the air, Haruo confronts Metfies. He's got Miyana on some sort of like crucifix-looking structure, sacrificing her, and it's this awesome reveal where they're having this conversation with each other, and you notice that there's on Metfi's hand there's some blood, and you're like, what's he done to Miyana Maina? And he turns around at the end of the like 2 minute long conversation and you realize that his own eye has been like fully ripped out. There's blood all over his eye and it's been replaced by this pendant.
That little ritual component he had in the second movie, right?
The one he was intentionally trying to create.
Yeah.
And that's something I love about this trilogy as well, how there are some real cool setups here. But yeah, it's that like 8-pointed star that is just lodged into his eye, and this is what he's using to control Ghidorah. And I've got to say, at this point, Metfies fully feels like a Final Fantasy villain. And after I thought of that comparison, I'm like, man, this anime trilogy feels like Final Fantasy.
It does.
In a lot of ways.
It does, actually. I mean, I haven't played a lot of Final Fantasy. I played through Crisis Core. Loved it.
The best Final Fantasy game.
Whoa. We watched the CG animated movie Final Fantasy Advent Children.
We never played Final Fantasy VII.
But you're right.
But Crisis Core is great.
Yeah, Crisis Core is great.
But like very, very Sephiroth. What are the other names of the people in that game?
There's Sephiroth.
Hold on, slide aside here. Sephiroth. Angeal. Do you remember this guy?
Yeah, yes.
Genesis?
Kektar?
Moogle?
The bird thing?
You know the bird thing.
Chocobo?
You know Chocobo.
Yeah.
Genesis from that game as well.
That's right.
Fully feels like a mix between Genesis and Sephiroth, I feel.
I love how in the first Planet of the Monsters movie, we are 100% convinced that Metfies is helping Haruo out and that he's kind of like...
Yeah, he's like the man on the inside.
He's like a secondary protagonist almost. That's like... patting Haruo on the back, helping him get all these opportunities to defeat Godzilla. But with this movie, there's the like, your gears start clicking and you realize that he's been like puppeteering him this whole way to get him to the point he's in now.
I would love to actually watch through this trilogy again sometime soon, because I feel like there are so many puzzle pieces like that you will only really appreciate with prior knowledge of what happens at the end of here. Because what was Metfies' whole goal in that first movie? He was basically trying to sway the entire ship to land on Earth.
Yeah.
And confront Godzilla.
Yep.
Which just all comes into his plan.
And for Haruo to be the symbol of hope.
Yeah, like, he's like specifically setting up Haruo here.
Yeah.
Especially since we learned that he is the one who blew up that ship of the elderly.
Yeah, it was Metfies.
What a reveal. Part of his plan all along.
And then we get this crazy dream sequence when Metfies is talking to Haruo, like within a vision, right? And we're going through Haruo's past where he does see his parents. We go over his name meaning hope. We see more of the pendant he was given of the like spring flowers.
And we see like key moments of the Earth's history in times of destruction. We see like Einstein's office with E equals MC squared written on the board. We see the Enola Gay, the ship that dropped the, I feel like it's the Hiroshima bomb.
Yeah, I think it was.
And we actually see that drop, that bomb as well. Just this wild sequence of events. And it gets real, real trippy. At points you see like there's a side plot with Martin and one of the other girls.
One
and
of the show vision.
One of the show, who knows. And they end up rocking up to Mothra's egg.
Yeah.
And Mothra's not in this movie, but I kind of like what they did here.
I do too. They used her to break through into Haruo's vision.
Yeah, they use the unborn Mothra. And you see like this shadow, the silhouette of Mothra. It looks crazy. You can make out a very small head and some antenna. But once that Mothra comes through, you see this imagery of like that eight-pointed star in Metfi's eye as Haruo ends up falling through this shattering earth. There's all that imagery of the like the yellow electricity shocks and spikes of Ghidorah. It's so good. I feel like this is one of the most... This is what I love about the anime form of media, is that they're able to come up with these genuinely insane-looking visuals, and it makes sense. It doesn't pull you out of the movie at all.
Yeah, and I will say as well, I think the animation's grown on me throughout this trilogy.
Because you really didn't like the way that they've done this.
Yeah, but even the character models, I don't know, I saw Haruo showing a bit more like...
Anything other than hatred.
Yeah, his face was... A lot better animated. It was showing a lot of emotions. I think all the characters were in this. And yeah, just like you were talking about, the eye behind Haruo, him falling through this crazy vision dimension. He wakes up and he freaking like pokes Metfi's eyes out, breaks the star, the little emblem he has.
He does the whole, yeah, like thumbs in the eyes. Yeah. Oh, it's so good.
And then, yeah, I mean... Ghidorah becomes reality. Godzilla like slaps him around a little bit, and then Ghidorah disappears.
Godzilla's final moments, he slaps him.
Yeah, a few times.
Yeah, Godzilla doesn't really do much in this movie.
No, but again, I don't know at this point if I like or dislike it, because throughout this whole trilogy, Godzilla has seemed more of this idea than an actual reality, almost.
Well, I don't know, because we've had Minus One come out recently, and that balanced the idea of a physical threat, Godzilla. Yeah. But there was that almost iconography of him being survivor's guilt as well.
Yeah.
And I do get that in this movie, he's an idea, but I don't know what specific idea he would be.
Well, he's the idea of like the old civilization. He's the idea of hate. He's the idea of holding on to something in your past that you just can't forgive. I mean, he's made humanity what they are. He's made the Xiv do what they're doing. He's made the Belusolato do what they've done. He's changed the trajectory of all three of these races' lives and history. And it seems like in the end, these movies are more interested in those three races and how them being changed has influenced them interacting with one another.
Dude, write a thesis on this. This is good stuff from you.
But like, that's what I felt, especially in this one. It's more about the Xiv and their ideals and Haruo and him coming to terms with who he's supposed to be. Way more than Godzilla, who's in it for probably 5 minutes.
Yeah, yeah. Because I guess if you're like looking at these three alien races and each of their journeys or what they stand for in these movies, you have, I think most clearly of all, the Belusolato. They're rising to the top of the food chain by whatever means they can, even if that means they themselves
need to become monsters.
Mm-hmm. You have the Xiv, who are so clearly wound up in this idea that the monsters are going to thrive no matter what. There's nothing they can do. So even if they're not becoming monsters, they're still giving up that humanity willingly,
yeah,
and giving away other people's humanity even.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have the humans who, in the face of monsters, they're the only race trying to actively fight it and hold on. And it goes to a really interesting point at the end of this movie as well, with Haruo's final arc of his journey.
My truth? I loved it. I freaking loved the ending of this movie.
No, you didn't, Jaisha.
Did you hate it?
I didn't hate it either.
We watched this at a watch party in our Podzilla Discord. As soon as the ending for this movie happened, the comments were on fire. And I was just quiet.
Ruined the movie for me. Such a waste of three movies worth of character development.
I was so quiet. I think it stays true to who Haruo is.
And we'll talk about the ending. I totally understand everybody who says that this ending sucked. Because I do think if you're looking at it a certain way, Haruo ends up nearly going through like a hero's journey. And you could see it as it like cuts him off from that last step right at the last second.
Yeah, because they get rid of Ghidorah. You think the movie is like coming to an end. You see this really like cute little clip show almost.
It's not cute. This is epic, Jaisha. This is like my favorite part of the movie.
Little montage of all the humans with the Hotua, like coming into their way of life. You see your bestie, Martin, just hanging out with the Hotua.
He's adopted the garb of the Hotua.
You see that Haruo and Maina's pregnant.
Maina? I don't know. One of them.
Whoever he created life with.
This is what confuses me as well. There's that final scene where he's like talking to one of them and it seems like they're together and they step up, but then the other one's pregnant? I don't know, dude.
I don't know. But like everything is perfect, right? Haruo's stopped King Ghidorah. Like they're all living in harmony back on Earth. Haruo gets to experience spring.
Yeah, and like even though Godzilla is not defeated as a threat, for the past tens of thousands of years, the Hotua have survived by living out in their caverns peacefully, and we see that peace can still happen while Godzilla is on this earth here. But yeah, Haruo just ends up, after what feels like years, just becoming depressed and almost coming to a realization that the Exif had warned him about earlier.
Yeah, well, I think we see that he gets like another vision of King Ghidorah. And before Metfi's died, Metfi's said something.
No, sorry, because we see Martin first.
Yeah, we see Martin first. And Martin has salvaged one of the vultures, the nanometal vultures from the last movie. And he's like, hey, I've taken a bit of nanometal out of Yuko, who's still
Hope you don't mind.
How about him just like salvaging, grabbing bits of metal out of her body? And he's fixed the vulture. And he says, from this technology, we can actually use the nanometal to rebuild civilization.
Mm.
And then after that, Haruo like gets a vision of King Ghidorah. He remembers Metfi's said that King Ghidorah will return. Like he comes for civilizations.
Yeah.
He comes. Humans are puppets that are made to breed these monsters, and King Ghidorah will eventually come. And then something in Haruo just clicks. And I love this moment. It's when he asks one of the Shobijin, what do you think of Godzilla? What do you feel when you see him? Because all that he feels is hate, right?
And that's what we've been seeing all these three movies.
Yeah, that's all he's been really, is hate of Godzilla. And he asks them what they see and they don't even know what hate is.
They don't have a word for it in their language.
They do not even have a word for hate. And he realizes like, hey, the hate can end with me and I can end everything here if I sacrifice myself. Because he's not just getting angry and going for a suicide run. He's getting the vulture. He's getting the only way that humanity can rebuild into a civilization. And he's destroying that in the process as well. So practically what he's done is he's made it so the Hotua are kind of, the Hotua and the humans that are with them all living in harmony, all happy the way they are. You hear like some of the guys who had come from the United Earth like saying they actually love this way of life.
Yeah, when they hear about the nanomaterial coming in, they're like, oh man, I actually, yeah, I really like this way of living. It's going to be hard going back to,
yeah,
like that higher way that we were before.
So Haruo, in an act of sacrifice, destroys any hope they have of rebuilding that civilization, which destroys any hope of King Ghidorah coming back and returning, because he's only coming for that civilization. Mm.
And he's the only one who knows the name of Ghidorah as well.
Exactly. And he's kind of ending the hate with him. The hate of Godzilla, all humanity's pent-up hate, the like cycle of destruction that, again, not just the physical Godzilla, but more so the thoughts and the history and what Godzilla's collectively done to the people. He's just ending it with him.
Yeah. It's crazy like how much it makes sense and how much it creates this real, very clean and neat picture when you look into it. And there's a conversation that Metfies and Rua have that I feel like is easily glossed over, but they talk about how Godzilla is this ultimate being on Earth, but if all the human race, all humanity was wiped out, he essentially wouldn't be Godzilla anymore. Mm-hmm. The name would mean nothing. Those ideas that they've given him would mean nothing. He would just become a monster. And looking at the ending of that, I feel like it's kind of implied that, yeah, without that humanity, the name of Godzilla wouldn't be there anymore. Without Haruo and his like group of humanity, without their thoughts of hatred, that hatred wouldn't exist anymore either.
Yeah, and together they can kind of forge a new path for the human race that is about harmony, right?
Mm.
And
it is. Well, that's what the Hōtua have been doing this whole time.
Exactly, that's their whole thing.
And I know that at the end of the movie, he ends up doing this like suicide bomb into Godzilla. I don't think that was ever meant to attack or hurt or even defeat Godzilla.
No.
It was more so that, yeah, that putting an end to his own line of humanity in a sense.
Yeah.
And letting this,
yes,
what's essentially an entirely different race with those new beliefs, those new ideals, rise up in this new earth, this new land.
Yeah, and I know it's not like typically or naturally where you think a character would end up. So I guess I do get how people are disappointed with it and don't like it, because it feels very like weird for a movie to go this way.
Because this happens in like the last 2-3 minutes as well, so it can feel like a complete 180 from what could have been, if you stopped it there, a really nice and happy ending.
Yeah, but like in a messed up way, Haruo, in doing that, has finally like saved the earth, which is what he wanted to do. Like get humanity back to earth, make things the way they were, save it. And it makes more sense to me for Haruo's like character arc, for the whole, all of the ideas this whole trilogy played with. It's just the perfect way to end it.
I think probably my favorite part of this movie comes after as the post-credit scene.
Yes.
Is that you see a lot of these Hōtua children, this new generation of kids, and what they're doing is almost like they're creating these tapestries, and they're giving their fears and their worries to it. One of the kids, like, oh, I can't remember if it's fears or worries, but one of them's like, man, I hope that I will never scrape my knees when climbing.
Yeah.
And a few other things. And then the other Hōtua leader with them is like, okay, now give these fears to the being of hatred.
Yeah.
And they've got this real cool wooden sculpture that looks like a vulture.
Yeah.
And almost in a weird roundabout way, Haruo becomes the deity that the Exif always wanted him to be.
But better, he becomes the symbol of letting go of hatred almost,
yeah,
right? Which is,
yeah,
something that everyone just says, like, Haruo is such a bad character. He's just full of hate. That's all he is. But in the end,
he ends up taking everybody's hate onto himself, yeah, so that they can live without it.
Yeah.
And it's cool because you see Maina Miana, I'm not too sure which one, at the end there. And like, she's actually smiling because of what's happening with the younger kids here.
I know.
Yeah, it's a real interesting interpretation, because for a trilogy, which a lot of people I can now see slam for not having enough monster fighting, and I do still think it's a bit weird that it holds the Godzilla name or the Godzilla title to it. It ends up playing with a lot of different ideas, and for sure goes in a roundabout way and takes a different approach to Godzilla,
probably the most different approach that we've seen so far, and puts a lot of iconography on him and a lot of those religious ideas into this movie. And almost like Minus One has done recently, it shows a character overcoming a lot of generational toxic beliefs in a way.
Yeah.
And like you said, saving humanity in two ways, in the literal sense that they're not going to die anymore, but in the second sense that they're going to grow further because of it.
Like, they didn't even need to defeat Godzilla to save the Earth, right? They just needed to, like,
come to terms with him.
Yeah.
And change their angle.
I know. It's honestly, like, the perfect ending. I couldn't believe it when I was watching it. I was like, what a way to cap off the trilogy.
Yeah, I think that was my thoughts of the ending as well. Like, even though I wasn't the biggest fan of the first movie, even though we didn't absolutely adore the second movie, I think that the third movie does pretty much the best that it can with the movies that have come prior to it. It uses those building blocks to, I think, build the best movie that it could make.
Yeah. Man, I'm so glad we're on the same page. I was wondering, like, what you were going to think. We should go into some final thoughts, but first off, because we don't have any trivia this time, do we?
No. Oh, wait, yes. Yes, we have trivia. We don't have news, but we have trivia.
We have trivia. Well, first, before we even get to the trivia, I just found this random, like, article that was published in the Washington Times where both the directors, Hiroyuki Shishita and Koben Shizuno, say a few things. I thought it would be cool just to read out.
Yeah.
But they wrote that their film is so different to what we know of Godzilla, and they know that it might disappoint some hardcore fans. But they also said that it is an intentional attempt to reach out to new audiences. And Shishita said that he and Shizuno welcome getting bashed by traditionalists. And they argued that it proves more than anything that they succeeded in creating something different. They said that rather than simply transferring the well-known tale into computer animation, they wanted to focus on what they called, like, Shakespearean human drama. And they decided to tackle complex issues, the meaning of religion, this futuristic post-apocalyptic universe. Shizuno said as well that he is not a Godzilla expert, so he simply made a film that he thought would be enjoyable and different. Which was so interesting, right? That they didn't even expect, they expected people to bash them for this and to not like what they've done.
I can jump further on top of that as well. I know last episode I talked about how Koben Shizuno, he didn't want to create another movie with wacky monster fights. Mm-hmm. But that idea and that choice to not have a lot of monster battles in this movie was actually brought down by Toho themselves. In this trilogy, they intentionally said that they wanted to do a different take. They wanted to tone down the exaggerated monster fights. And they wanted these films to be more experimental.
Yeah, interesting.
That doesn't mean that Shizuno, I think it still stands that he wanted to do what they did and not include a lot of those monster fights. But it is interesting to note as well that Toho themselves didn't really want that for this trilogy either.
Yeah, and I will just say, we talked about Gen Urobuchi a bit last episode, the writer for this. He's done a whole lot of really cool manga and anime. And Ravenous Glavinus in our Discord. Ravenous Glavinus also streams on Twitch. You should check him out. He plays a lot of Monster Hunter. He loves Urobuchi, loves a whole lot of the work he's done. And he said that he's known for his, like, dark material and gore, and that's almost what his fans, like, and anime fans write him off for. But his work's always a lot more, like, philosophical than that, which I can definitely see looking at this trilogy, especially with these themes we've talked about in this movie. And I really want to check out more of Urobuchi's stuff.
Yeah, if this has done anything for me, it's made me really keen to jump onto a lot of those more experimental, like, anime or Japanese media, because I feel like that's what Japan's known for.
Yeah.
It's just real wacky out there stories.
Am I getting back into anime now?
Whoa, careful. Can I tell you a little bit more trivia?
Yeah, Jason? please.
If you look at our cover art for this episode, there's Metfeast carrying Hiroe's body on the hill. This is inspired by Michelangelo's famous Pieta sculpture, which depicts the biblical Mary carrying the dead body of Jesus. Jason, I have a picture of it right here for you.
Wow. Mary's really just chilling out with Jesus like dying on top of her, isn't she?
Jesus is just like right there.
Haruo.
And Haruo's right there.
Mitfi's is Mary. I guess Mitfi's kind of did bring up Haruo, make him what he was. Man, makes you think.
Makes you think.
That's pretty cool.
Honestly, that and the Ghidorah Bandai figure, there's not too much else from this movie. I just wanted to say that one little more piece there.
Okay. No, thank you. Well, like, instead of more trivia, did you actually want to take us into your final thoughts? Give us a rating.
Well, I think we've pretty much said a lot of what we wanted to say here, but I understand that this movie can be really, really divisive, but I think, like I said, with the groundwork that was laid with the past two movies, I think that this movie did an absolute stunning job of, one, hearing what the audience's criticisms were, and working through that to create a real masterful and thought-provoking final product here. One that has ties even back to the first movie to show that they were actually thinking about the series or the three movies as a whole when making this. I know that we said the first and second movies felt like they would have fit better in the format of like a traditional series of anime.
Yeah.
But with this movie, I felt like it was just perfect as a movie, as its own. I think Godzilla was done a little dirty. but on the human side of things, I was like fully enthralled by these plot lines of the Ixif cult and just how like gritty and crazy they turn out to be. That culmination of like the final showdown with Mitfi's and Haruo on that hilltop, with the storms going around them, with what seems like this insurmountable force of Ghidorah. I just love it. It's giving me these real interesting feelings that I don't think I've felt before while watching any of these Godzilla movies. I don't think it's perfect still. I think there are a few things that could have been tweaked, could have been fixed. I would have loved to hear Martin's Japanese voice the entire time, and I'm blaming that one on you.
Unbelievable.
But I think I'm going to settle this one on a nice heft. Deja, you know what I'm going to give this?
What?
I'm going to give Godzilla the Planet Eater 4.5
Whoa.
Heads floating in my soup.
Oh my gosh, how about one of the Shobujin's heads floating and blinking around in that ritual soup?
Also, very good part of the movie. That part's a dream sequence, but it's immediately followed up by the cult drinking soup. And you're like, wait, are they drinking the soup with Maina in?
4.5 out of 5. So you've been on a journey through these. They've consistently gone on better for
you? 2 to 3.5 to 4.5. Yeah, I know that a lot of people really actually do like this last movie, The Planet Eater.
Yeah.
And I say, like, this is one of the best of the Godzilla franchise, and it's such a shame that a lot of people find it weighed down by the movies that come before it. And I can see that, but I think it ends up in a really, really cool place.
Yeah, I was even looking on Letterboxd, and it's got a really low overall rating. I think it's like 2 out of 5 overall or something like that, which is so surprising to me.
On IMDb as well, like, this is the worst out of the trilogy, I think.
But it's got a couple like real firm fans of it. I'm just going through my notes here. I actually really liked the final fight between Godzilla and Ghidorah. I know I said he was just like slapping him around, but it's a real like emotional part of the movie. Some real like heartfelt music behind it too. It's not the classic battle fight music.
The music in this whole movie, there's like a 20 minute stretch where it just doesn't let up.
Yeah, but it's a real interesting score to have behind Godzilla. And he isn't going crazy. He isn't letting off his atomic breath. He's not turning into burning Godzilla again. But he is like slowly breaking Ghidorah's like jaw, pushing him to the side. And I think he eventually does use like one just real thin beam, and it clashes with King Ghidorah's. Yeah. And it wasn't the big finale fight that you're used to, but it was interestingly done. I actually quite liked enjoying it. I don't have a problem with how little Godzilla was in this movie. My main problem would just be all the back and forth conversations at the start that did feel a little exposition heavy at times. But yeah, man, I'm with you. I'm going to give this 4.5 out of 5 kids floating in big old ritual soup. I had a blast with this whole trilogy. I think this is the most interesting take on Godzilla we've seen, and I absolutely love it for that. The finale is probably my favorite finale in a Godzilla movie ever, just by how out of left field it was, how unexpected it is, but how right it feels for the story. And I love Haruo. I'm all for Haruo. Haters, get out of here. Haruo, stand behind me.
Haruo, stand behind me. That's good stuff.
Yeah, I loved it, man. Such a crazy movie. Such a crazy movie.
Jasha, hold up. I've got something coming on my comms.
Your comms?
A rogue signal from an unknown caller. Hold up, do you think we have time to see what the heck this is?
We're running long, but yeah, what the heck? Do it.
Except don't do this at home.
Hey, it's your old pal. Hey, it's your old pal, Slim City, here. First time, long time. I have a lot of free time over here, you know, as a city. And I was just able to finally finish the trilogy, the rewatch. I knew the EXIF were going to screw us. I had a feeling when we had our episode. I remember wanting to say something during our episode, but I didn't want to say anything just in case I was right. Also, I watched the English version with the English subtitles on in the final part, and it's pretty crazy how different the versions are. The phrasings of King Ghidorah, the deaths that they wanted, it's all very different meanings in what they were saying. Anyway, what a strange trilogy. Godzilla, our boy's barely in it, but I still had a lot of fun. I thought the third one was a fitting end. Great ending. Thank you, Toho. As always, thank you. Back to being a city. You know, I got a lot of stuff to do. Bye.
Huh. Slim City.
Slim City. Good to hear that you're doing well, man.
Yeah, it's really good to hear from you. Great to have you on the show once more.
He sounds like he's thriving.
Is it just me? Or? He really does. He seems like he's doing well over there. We should just probably leave him to do his thing, yeah. Right?
Leave him to breed.
Leave him to breed over in that city. Thanks, Slim. We'll look out for you, bud.
Yeah.
Should I go into some more thoughts from our listeners? We've got a few here, one of which from Liam, or It No Dove, in the Discord. And Liam says, the most surreal and introspective film in the franchise. I appreciated focusing on our protagonists over monster action. Haruo's final moments were fitting for the flawed man he remained throughout, unable to let go of Godzilla until the very end. 4.449 out of 5.
That's basically a 4.5.
Basically a 4.5. Liam's with us. Let's go, Liam. Join us. And we've got another one here from Joseph, Joe Jazzy in the Discord. Joe writes, give praise to your demise. There is nothing greater. Best one in the anime trilogy. And I think Godzilla is in it the least of all of them. Like the other two films, I think they have amazing ideas and themes that I just want to see explored more. Instead, this felt like it spent way too much time on the wrong stuff, leaving the more compelling things flying right by, especially the ending. Make the ending 10 minutes longer even, and I think it could have been so much more impactful and feel more earned than it did for me. 3 out of 5 from Joe. Yeah, I get it. It does... Even though I love the ending so much, it's very quick. And it's just, it feels like tapped onto the end and almost unsuspecting, right? You think the whole thing's wrapped up and then Haruo goes and does this. But I do love it.
Yeah, I think there could be a world in which, like, with an extra 5-10 minutes, you are made to feel almost what Haruo is feeling like. Yes, there's an awesome culture and society down here with awesome culture levels.
Spend a bit more time on how they're doing, right? Yeah. And how much he sees that this is the right thing to do. He doesn't even go and tell, like, his wife or his baby.
Nah.
No.
Nah. I think there is a world in which, yeah, you're led and you're shown how Haruo feels, like, with the society going on that he doesn't really feel a part of before he goes off, but...
He hasn't let go of it all like his other men have done.
Yeah.
Yeah. It'd be interesting.
And we have one last message here from Big O. I feel so conflicted on me actually finding the Planet Eater good.
Yes.
I heard from so many people saying, if you didn't like the first two, then you probably won't like this one. But yet I ended up really enjoying it. It's so bizarre because I was expecting just to find this film slightly better than City on the Edge of Battle while still being boring, and yet I was never bored at all. I was always engaged and interested on what was happening and what was going on with Haruo, Metfi's, Miana, Maina, Godzilla, and this film's interpretation of King Ghidorah. Even the fight kept me intrigued, even when it was just Ghidorah biting on Godzilla and picking him up. I might be overreacting, but I seriously can't believe I finished watching this and thought to myself, what the if? I actually liked this. I also thought the ending was perfect and wrapped up everything nicely. I'm also glad that the actions the characters make, mainly Haruo in previous two films, actually affect the plot and events in this film. Mm. Big O gives it 4 out of 5.
Wise words from Big O there. Yeah, I mean, to be honest, most of our reviews we read out, like everyone really loved the movie.
Mm.
So it's pretty cool.
I will also say the final fight between Godzilla and King Ghidorah, what this movie does really well is that by the time you get up to that final fight, boy, are you rooting for Godzilla here.
Yeah, you've learned all this horrible stuff about King Ghidorah and the XF. You're 100% behind this guy who's been the flat out villain in all the other movies.
Go hard, dude. Rip his jaws apart. Go for it.
Yeah, that's all from our reviews. And that's all for the anime trilogy. We're saying goodbye to Toho's Reiwa era for now. And we're heading back to the Monsterverse for 2019's Godzilla, King of the Monsters. Not the 50s King of the Monsters.
Not the 50s King of the Monsters. With Martin.
With no. Steve Martin.
Steve Martin.
Martin's not in that one. Sorry, Mike.
Oh, man. This one is a Martin too, right?
We'll have to see. But the synopsis for Godzilla King of the Monsters goes, long live the king. Follows the heroic efforts of the cryptozoological agency Monarch as its members face off against a battery of god-sized monsters, including the mighty Godzilla, who collides with Mothra, Rodan, and his ultimate nemesis, the three-headed King Ghidorah. When these ancient super species, thought to be mere myths, rise again, they all vie for supremacy, leaving humanity's very existence hanging in the balance. And this is very interesting because we just watched a big movie where the big bad is King Ghidorah. We're getting a whole nother take on a similar story, right?
Yeah.
King Ghidorah vying to be the like last one standing, the different, king of the monsters.
Yeah, different iteration of him for sure. We watched the trailer or one of the trailers of this movie. I don't think I'd seen the trailer since it was showing in theaters. Man, does this movie look exciting?
I know.
So many titans.
I know.
Serizawa's back.
Serizawa's back. Mothra's in this one for more than just a silhouette.
Yeah. Millie Bobby Brown.
Millie
Bobby
Brown.
Everyone's here.
Hey, Kyle Chandler.
Jasha. Thomas Middleditch. Yeah, Kyle Chandler's in here as well. Good stuff.
Yeah, I'm excited for it. As always, send in your thoughts on Godzilla King of the Monsters, podzillapod@gmail.com. But I think for now, I mean, it's sad to say, right? Slim City sounds like it's thriving.
Yeah.
But we probably should just rid Monster Island of all the nanometal. So did you want to maybe, you can take a vulture out there, right, and see to it?
Oh, I thought you were going to be the one to jump in the... I thought we agreed to it.
I don't think I've got any hate within me right now. I don't think it would be... We know you. You're so full of hatred, Mike.
I'm full of love for Martin, man. No hate in any bone of my... G-Commander really did us dirty by giving us the vulture, didn't he?
Yeah.
The Drake brothers.
The vault. We don't have a single bone of hate in our bodies.
I mean, it looks kind of cool as a centerpiece for our office.
The vulture?
The vulture.
Leave the vulture here. Leave Slim City to thrive. We'll just hope that King Ghidorah doesn't show up.
King Ghidorah's not going to come back. Slim City is going to stay relegated to his area. There's no way he's going to continue breeding and taking over this monster island.
No, and we can just take the vulture out for a few joyrides. You know, we don't have to get rid of it.
Yeah, yeah. It'll be exciting for fun.
For fun.
For fun.
Thanks for listening to Podzilla. Join our Discord server, tag us on Letterboxd, and follow us on our socials at PodzillaPod. The links are all in our show notes. If you're looking to help support the show and fund more adventures on Monster Island, check us out on Patreon at patreon.com/podzilla to get access to extended cuts of every episode and the occasional bonus ep. Big shout out to Cassie Celine for our seasonal podcast art. And a quick disclaimer that all music and additional audio used in this episode belong entirely to the Tobo Company.
If we were in this theoretical Mothra sequel.
Okay.
As the gender swapped Shobujin.
Okay.
If we looked identical,
mm-hmm.
what would be the one thing that we would do to differentiate each other?
Well, I could grow facial hair.
Get out of here. I'll have you know I have a very presentable
chin beard, chin strap. I'd grow a mo.
Never ending 4 o'clock shadow.
I'd grow a mustache.
I'll have the chin strap.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's how you know.